amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you guys are having a great week. I succumbed to the pressure and I adopted a dog this week. So now, not only do I have five small children under the age of 10, but I have a dog named Bruin. So I don't know. I will never sleep again. And I will forever now live in fear of stepping in dog shit in my house. But you know what? The kids are happy. And I guess that's what matters, right? In other news, I watched both episodes this week of The Bachelorette. It was the final to Hannah's journey to love. Well, Monday night, she kicks off Peter. Peter is the pilot from Southern California. He mentions he's a pilot every 5 minutes. When they went on the hometown date, she found a condom in the center section of his Trans Am. So we know he likes to get it on all the time. So on the after the rose at the ceremony, you know, afterwards, where they sit down and meet each other months after she dumped him, she admits to the viewing audience that they did have sex, not just two times in the windmill, but actually four. Now, she was doing that for two reasons. One, she wants to ensure Peter is the next bachelor. She does not want Tyler to be the next bachelor because, as we will discuss for night two, she's still holding out a candle for him. She's hoping that they can get back together. So she wants America to know, this guy's your bachelor, you're going to see a lot of sex. And I know that's what you guys want because the ratings for Colton were really low. And then they went up for me because I was willing to get it on a couple times. And then she was also trying to stick it to Jed because, you know, Jed is watching this whole thing back in, you know, Nashville or wherever he lives. And she wanted to make a point of letting him know, yes, we did get engaged on some strange platform covered in scarves and medieval vases in Greece. But you should know that someone else's semen was inside of me. So before you go back and brag to your loser friends about how you won this whole show, you know that I was with somebody who can really, like, you know, bring it to the table. So that was, I believe, her ulterior motive. So then the next night, you see her parents meet Jed and Tyler. Of course, they like Tyler. Tyler is like her dad. Like, he's a Southern guy, you know, really sweet. Probably, you know, Tyler's not the guy that's going to talk about, I don't know, Thoreau or Fortune 500 companies, but he's incredibly gorgeous and he knows how to put on moisturizer and he looks great in like a running short. But Tyler, you know, he's going to be like a Jacinda Barrett from Real World. You know, they appear on a reality show, but then they're going to have superstardom. Tyler is now being followed on Instagram by Gigi Hadid. He has moved into another echelon. He's not going to be like hanging out with Jade and Tanner at like the Bachelor Nation conventions. He is now going to be on the runway. Now has a talent manager, is an acting manager. He's going to be appearing in movies. I think that ultimately he will probably retire at 50 and move back to Florida where his family is. And he will maybe get married to somebody on a speedboat when he's like 50 and have like two illegitimate children. But I don't see this guy settling down anytime soon, considering all the action he's probably getting right now. So anyway, Tyler meets the family. They like him. He tries to propose to her on the platform. She stops him. He says, "It's not me, is it?" And she takes a deep breath and explains to him she's in love with someone else. That someone else is Jed. Jed wears extremely tight brown suits and bragged to her mother and to her father that he was able to take care of their daughter because he had just begun a lucrative career as someone who writes dog jingles. I've listened to the dog jingle that he did perform for the dog company that he mentioned, and it was incredibly bad. I mean, the guy is terrible at his job. So I'm not really sure what's going to become of his career because, again, we all know that he joined the show to become a country music singer. And they also have this moment where she meets with him in a rental home in Los Angeles to talk about the state of their relationship because they got engaged in about mid-May. And by mid-June, this People magazine story comes out where Jed's ex-girlfriend, Haley, who of course is also a singer-songwriter, admits that they were in love with each other and texting each other even in the moments before he got on the plane to go to the show. She knew he was signed up for the show. She encouraged it for his career/her career. and was so surprised that he actually got engaged at the end. So according to the People magazine editor, there was even more to the story that they didn't print, which didn't make sense to me, just print it. But there's even more proof that this guy was a total jerk. So, you know, he was like pretty open about it for the first time in Bachelor history, where he said, listen, I did join the show because I want to boost my career. But then he qualified it earlier in the season and said, but then I fell in love with you. But he didn't really prove it on the show. For example, when she's telling him how much she loves him and he's got this ring that he got for free in his pocket, he looks like he's about to do like projectile vomit. He's sweating. He's not that interested in her. I think he kind of like painted himself into a corner. He's like, crap, now I got to get engaged. I don't know how long this is going to last. And in that scene in the rental in California, she notes that she got pictures from girls that were in his apartment after she visited him well after their engagement. So he was still entertaining ladies in his apartment, and that he apparently had bragged to his friends back in Nashville that he had won the show. Not, I got engaged, I can't believe I met this woman, we're going to get married. It was like, yeah, I won the show, now what? Like, dog jingle, screw that. Like, I'm moving on to big time stuff now. So she takes the ring off, which, you know, doesn't really belong to her anyway. It belongs to Neil Lane, and she hands it back to him. And then she broke up with him permanently over the phone. So then they meet up on stage. And the weird thing is, he walks out on a stage and she hugs him. I would have never hugged him. I would have just like pointed to a chair, like, just go sit down. And if I were a producer, I wouldn't have allowed them to sit together on that velvet couch. I would have made him sit in like a toddler seat, you know, one of them that you can find at like Pottery Barn. And I have to say, he didn't seem that upset that they weren't together anymore. He didn't seem very brokenhearted. Then she has Tyler come out and she says, I'm a bold girl. You're a bold guy. I like to make bold moves. Let's go out still. This is not going to be a situation where like the Jason Mesnick, Molly Mulaney love story where she was the runner up and now they're married with kids. I don't think that this guy, like I mentioned before, is really going to do much in the way of relationships. I think he'll be sweet to her and maybe he'll entertain her for like a glass of wine. But I think he, again, is moving on to big time stuff. Now, if I were to use my degree in armchair psychology, I would say this. I don't think she was really in love with Jed the whole time. I actually think she was into Tyler. But I remember she had mentioned how insecure she was at the beginning of the show. She kept self-doubting, saying to herself, do I really deserve to be the Bachelorette? And we know from the season that she was on The Bachelor, she was constantly self-doubting when it came to being the kind of girl who should win a pageant title. Even though she's gorgeous, she's kind of funny and interesting, she didn't think she was good enough. So I think she meets Tyler and she sees this goddess, like he's so hot. He's like the Paul Newman of contracting. And she listened to her own narrative and said, there's no way we're going to end up together. I'm not good enough for him. So I think she ended up choosing the guy that she thought she deserved. And now I think all these months later, I don't know, actually, it's probably a month and a half later if we get down to brass tacks, I think that she chose Jed because she thought that's what she deserved. And I think that in a year and a half from now, she's going to tell us all that she met the guy that she's going to marry back in Tuscaloosa. And I think that he probably works at a bank. Maybe she grew up with him. I don't know. But I think it's going to be full circle. And, you know, maybe she'll keep in touch with Tyler. But she'll probably go on to host, like, Good Morning Alabama or something like that. She'll probably have a bunch of kids and live a very happy life. But this Jed, I mean, he's just disgusting. And I hope that, you know, he never gets a great, you know, job anywhere. I hope that people remind him for the rest of his life that he should never wear really tight leisure suits on national television. So sorry it didn't work out on the show, Hannah, but I'm very confident you're going to meet somebody else. And I'm very confident that Tyler will appear in like some sort of Calvin Klein underwear ad. This episode's great. I got a chance to interview Tarek El Mousso from HGTV's Flip or Flop. I asked my friend John Ward, who's a director and producer of films, to review Southern Charm because he's from the South. And then I asked my friend Danielle Schaefer to review TLC's Kate Plus Date. So here we go. You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. I'm here with Tarek Elmoso from HGTV's Flip or Flop, who's pretty much my neighbor. It's a pleasure to meet you.
I know, we are neighbors. Nice to meet you too.
So tell me a little bit about you. I know you're from Buena Park. So that's a suburb of Orange County, and your father's Egyptian and your mother is Belgian.
So yeah, both of my parents immigrated from other countries. I'm first generation American, and I did grow up in Buena Park, California, kind of by Knott's Berry Farm area.
Yeah.
And you know, my parents came to this country with nothing, and my mom became a school teacher and my dad became an engineer, and early on they struggled. And they were in a new country, learning new languages, starting new jobs. And my childhood, we started off in Lakewood, actually, California, and then we moved to Buena Park, California.
How many languages were spoken at home?
Oh, wow. Well, mostly just primarily English, obviously. And my family spoke French, too. And I used to be able to speak French. I can still speak a little bit of French.
And you have a sister?
Yeah, my sister, she's 39 years old, and she's a successful salon owner.
And so how did you get into real estate? Because you started your career pretty young.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was always hustling from a young age. I mean, I remember being a kid, like 6 years old, doing awful paintings and selling them door to door for nickels. Like when I was a kid, I was doing that. And then I've started so many different companies over the years. My first one, actually, I was 15 years old, started a clothing company. So I was always hungry and I was always wanted more. And I was never really good in school because I just didn't really have the patience to relax and study and sit in classrooms. You know, I wanted to go out there and experience the world and really do some big things. And I attempted to go to college and it just wasn't for me. So I was selling kitchen knives, actually. It was year 2000.
Kitchen knives.
By the way, Cutco kitchen knives. And I was killing it. I was doing pretty darn good, actually. I was one of the top of the nation. It was very exciting. But
you were the top of the nation?
One of the top. But what happened was back then, there was no computers and tablets and all those things. So everything was written down in a sales book. And I'm like super ADHD. And what happened was I lost my sales book. So I literally put myself out of business overnight. And I was actually at a Washington Mutual ATM in Cerritos, California, which is pretty close to us. And I was totally broke. I had no job. I just lost my sales book because I was in sales. And I remember looking up to the right and there was a crooked real estate sign. And the sign said, Wise Old Owl Real Estate School. Mm. It was like that first big defining moment in my life. I remember looking at the ATM, looking at the sign, looking at the ATM, looking at the sign, and saying, you know what, if I could sell knives, I could sell houses. So I literally pulled every dollar out of my bank account, walked across the street, and signed up for real estate classes.
And so you were 21 when this happened?
I was 20 years old.
20 years old.
So it was just right. I was just literally standing at the right place at the right time and saw the right sign. I don't know if the sign itself or it was a sign from a higher power. I don't know, but that's how I got into real estate. Just by looking over and seeing a sign.
What do you think the impact of having immigrant parents had on your business acumen?
You know, growing up, what I learned was hard work, man. My parents were immigrants, both educated. My dad was an engineer. My mom was a school teacher, and they worked hard. And the one thing I really got from my dad was the results you get from working hard. And from a young kid, that's all we did is we worked hard. So he was... No, it didn't matter what I did, I had to outwork the competition. He always wanted me to win. He always wanted me to try to be the best. Mm-hmm. And he was very positive. And I think that's why I'm like the way I am today.
So then you got married when you were like 24 years old?
Well, I got into real estate when I was 20, and then I ended up meeting my ex-wife, Christina, at the age of 24. And she worked for me for a little bit, very little bit. And then we ended up getting together. She had just got out of college and I was already in real estate. I had a sales team and she was new to the company. So she actually started working for me. That's how I met her.
Holy conflict of interest.
Yeah. Yeah. So we worked together for a few weeks and then we ended up being together.
So then How were you found by HGTV? Tell us a little bit about that.
So here's one thing about me that everybody needs to know. I don't believe anyone will ever find you. I believe you need to find them.
I agree.
So I'm all about taking action. HGTV didn't find me. Production didn't find me. Mm-hmm. I found them. I had an idea and I took action on my idea and made it happen. The biggest problem I see is people have these ideas and they don't take action. Yeah. Like the second that idea hit me, within minutes, I was emailing production companies. Which ones? I have no idea. I just Googled Los Angeles production companies. Seriously.
Yeah.
You know, when you have an idea, you have to move fast and you have to take action, because if not, you're never going to do anything with it. And for people that are waiting for someone to come to them, the odds of something actually happening are very slim. It was really, really great, because at the end of that video, literally I was broke. I had nothing. And at the end of the video, I literally announced to the world that I am going to have a hit TV show flipping houses. I'm going to have a seminar company teaching people how to flip houses. And I'm going to have a big real estate company investing in flipping hundreds of houses. And every single thing I said in that video, which was a dream, actually came my reality.
So when you pitched the show, was that after the housing bubble burst?
Yeah.
So you're having a moment of crisis. Like, I got to make things happen.
Oh, I mean, I was struggling. 2007, 8, 9, like, killed me. Like, kicked the shit out of me. I mean, I worked and worked and worked, and didn't matter how hard I worked. Nothing I did was working. And it was just the most difficult business period of my life. Looking back, I wouldn't change anything, because the lessons I learned from that recession are, like, you can't replace that. But I saw an opportunity in the marketplace, all these bank-owned properties. I remember investors were coming into the market. I didn't know anything about house flipping. I just knew math, right? So if you buy for X, you put X into it, and you sell for X, and there's money in the middle, you're going to make a profit. So all of a sudden, I started seeing investors making money. And then I had this crazy idea to flip houses. And of course, everybody told me I was stupid and crazy and no one's going to do it with me. And I didn't know what I was doing and blah, 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 blah. But the way I am is to never quit until I get the results I want. So eventually, I found someone that said yes. Flipped that first house. It was in Santa Ana, California. Paid $115,000 for it. Sold it for $169,000. Made $34,000 net profit, which back then was like $340 million.
Totally.
After that first deal, I never looked back, ever.
And just to put this in perspective for people, you had gone from living a nice lifestyle, then the bubble bursts, and then you're living in a really tiny apartment.
Yeah, like my life, see, what people don't realize with life, it can change really fast if you want it. So for me, I was literally a 20-year-old broke kid living in my mom's garage. And the reason I was living in that garage is because my parents had got divorced, so she rented out my bedroom in Buena Park, and I couldn't afford the rent to rent my bedroom from my mom at 20. So I had nowhere else to go, because I had broken up with a girlfriend at the time. So I rolled a cot into my mom's garage and I slept in there with like my dirt bike, my jet ski, my spray paint cans. Like, it was an actual garage. And that's right when I got into real estate. The first few months were really miserable, but I decided to, you know, give it everything I had for a 90-day period. I worked 6 hours a day for 90 days. I worked 6 days a week for 90 days, like 12 to 14 hour days. After 90 days, I ended up earning $120,000 in commissions right around my 21st birthday. So I went from that garage and I bought $1 million house at the age of 21, and I was doing really good. I was feeling really happy. Of course, my ego was way too big.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, the world kicked the shit out of me and that thing's gone, luckily. So, and then what happened was, I was living this high lifestyle. 2007 came, I literally lost everything. I had to start over. It was the first major depressive period of my life. I had to sell my Mercedes, BMW, my cars, my houses, and I had to move into this tiny little apartment with a roommate. So that was a real devastating moment in my life.
But important.
But a very important
but
moment.
Important.
I mean, life is nothing more than a series of ups and downs, right? Mm-hmm. So it's what you take from the downs that makes your ups better.
So now you're on the show. Mm-hmm. The show's doing really well. And then tell everybody about the health. What happened to your health.
Well,
because I think that's, I remember reading about you once you had your health scare. And so I think people really started to connect to you personally when they read about what happened to you.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, I'm not glad it happened to me, but I'm okay with it, because I know that the impact it's made on the general public, I guess, because I've had so many people message me letting me know that they heard my story. And because they heard my story, they went and got checked, and they did, in fact, find out they had cancer.
Wow.
So there's a good chance that my story might have saved somebody, which makes me feel good.
So someone actually saw on camera that you had some swelling. But correct me if I'm wrong, but you already thought it was an issue and had gone to see the doctor, but they wrote it off. They said it was fine.
Yeah. So it was 2010, I think. all like I was clearing my throat all the time, and I felt like a lump in my throat, but I thought I was crazy. And I went to my doctor, and my doctor completely dismissed it. He didn't do any further testing. He told me it was a fatty mass, or he gave me allergy medicine, and I knew something was wrong. I should have gone with my gut and went to another doctor.
So now you're dealing with the taking care of this, the thyroid cancer, treating that, and then you find out you have testicular cancer.
Yeah. It was pretty crazy. It was back to back. So found out I had thyroid cancer, and because of that misdiagnosis, we went through old medical records to see if my doctor had missed anything else. And I had an irregular physical about a year prior, but he never sent a referral or told me to do any follow-ups. And I didn't know what's going on. You know, I'm a young kid, working like crazy. Last thing I was worried about is thinking about cancer or health issues, right? So it was a wild story. I was at my thyroid cancer doctor setting up my surgery, and there was a last-minute opening in the same building to get, ultrasound done on my junk, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, I'm here. Let's do it. So I was talking to the x-ray tech that was performing the test, and he's a local guy, whatever. We were just talking, normal conversation. And I remember he got real quiet.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, well, okay, something's different. Like, he's a mindset shift. You know, I can read people. People in general can read people. So I said, what's wrong? What's going on? He's like, nothing. I'm like, what do you mean nothing? You're being weird. He's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, listen, like, what is going on? He's like, are you in pain? I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, if you're in pain, the emergency room's down the hall.
Wow.
So right when he said that, my heart,
it's like a punch
dropped
to the gut.
20 minutes later, I'm in a room and they're scheduling me for surgery for testicular cancer.
Wow. And this is within 1 year?
This was within maybe a month or two.
And then you have this back injury.
The back injury.
How did that happen?
You know, the back injury, what people don't realize, like, the back problem was way more difficult for me to get through than the cancer. I mean, well, actually, no, they were about the same. They were both really tough. They were about the same. The back, it literally stole a year of my life. It took away my ambition, my personality, my drive, my excitement, my happiness. I was on, you know, all the opiates, Vicodin, Percocet, Dilaudid. I lost 50 pounds. I dropped to 168 pounds, and I'm a big guy, so that was real small for me.
Yeah.
You can see my chest bones, and it was just the most awful, painful experience of my life.
How did the injury happen?
It was just, you know, my whole life I rode dirt bikes. I played football, ice hockey, baseball. I played sports, and I was playing golf actually, and I hurt it on the course, and I already had injured it previously, but not bad. And I kept playing, and I took one last swing and I hit the ground, and that was it.
Wow.
For a year, I did not walk right.
And then something that I heard you say to Dr. Drew, which I think is a powerful message, is really making sure that you have a health advocate, because it sounded like you saw someone who wasn't communicating with your other doctors and you got yourself into a precarious position. So I thought that was really interesting.
To be honest, I went through so much in such a rather short period of time that I had so many different doctors and so many different medical issues. I was getting pumped up with so many different pills and hormones and injections. I lost who I was, and I was real sick for a few years. When I say sick, I just struggled with, you know, anxiety, depression, because they removed my thyroid. They were medicating me with T3 hormones and T4 hormones. And then I was on testosterone injections, HCG injections, vitamin B12, like so much shit, you know. And looking back, the only reason I'm able to figure out what really happened to me was because I became so broken after my divorce, trying to find answers. And I found my answers, and I found my answers by looking at my past and finally realizing what happened to me. Because when you're going through it, you don't know you're going through it. That's the biggest problem. When people are going through shit, they don't realize they're going through shit until later on when they look back and realize how bad it was.
Did anybody in that time say to you, you don't seem yourself? And if they did you listen to them?
You know, not really. But no. I wasn't myself.
Yeah.
But I know I wasn't myself.
Yeah.
And I know to the point I wasn't myself where I was at the end before I ended up separated. I told some people that I think I needed to get some help.
Yeah. And just to give perspective on that too, you're really young when you become successful, really young when you become this TV star. So you have to deal with success, fame, money, marriage, your wife is going through IVF cycles, you have health issues. Looking back at that period of time, someone says to you, I'm in a marriage and I'm really having some difficult times. What would you say to them? Because it seems like you guys went through quite a bit at a young age. So do you think, and you're on television, so do you think that those problems are things that would have been there, or do you think that the TV show sort of amplified it?
It's like anything in life. Yeah. For anyone to say, you know, it's just a combination of everything. A lot of shit happened fast. And, you know, the truth is, knowing what I know now, if I can change history, things differently, what happened never would have happened. Mm-hmm. Meaning I feel like, you know, obviously we did get divorced, but I think there was a lot of things that caused that were preventable.
So how do you think that being on TV changed the trajectory of your life?
I mean, let's be honest, being on TV, it creates exposure. People know you, you don't mm-hmm. have a personal life. And it creates a lot of, you know, it gives people a lot of different opportunities. And let's be honest, it gives people outs. You know, there's, if you're known and you have more options in the world because of the, you know, whatever celebrity status or whatever it might be you've created. So I think a lot of times people on TV, they do get divorced because of the fact of the opportunities they have, because people want to meet them or talk to them or whatever that might be. Yeah. And let's just be honest, when you're on TV, it can create, you know, it can change people. It does. I haven't always been centered. I mean, there have been periods of my life where I let my success or whatever I was going through affect me, which I thought was a positive manner, maybe more egotistical than I should have been. And I was, again, I'm glad I experienced that, because then I got my ass handed to me and it stripped everything from me. So for me ever to think I have the right to have an ego again, there is no right, because I'm no different than anyone else. And that's why this time around I've learned so many valuable lessons. And that's why I'm just on this mission to like really get out there and help people. And I want to lift others, and I want to share my stories, because I know what it feels like to feel like shit. And I know what it feels like to feel good. And I feel like if people came together, we can really help other people and lift them and really improve their lives.
People want to know, is it difficult to film with an ex? Many people have had a divorce.
Of course it is. Anyone that says it's easy is lying. Let's just be honest. Is it awful? No. Is it perfect? No. Is it great? No. I mean, is it work? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, does everybody love going to work? You know, it's not easy filming with my ex, but it's what we do. So it's okay. You know, in life, not everything is easy. And most times, the more difficult something is, the more rewarding it is. You just have to go through it. Like, filming right now is great. We have a great, I guess, on-screen chemistry. And we've just been filming together for a very long time. And it's gotten easier and easier. And it gets easier every day. As time passes, it heals things, you know?
Okay, so now a lot of people want me to ask you, if you're open to the idea of ever being married again. Obviously, you know, it's still pretty fresh that you've been divorced. You know, however, can you conceptualize, can you see it in the future? Like, more kids, marriage again?
You know, I've said for years, no. I tried it, didn't work out. I had my shot, but I've been on my own for 3 years now. And it gets lonely, you know, as people, we want to love and we want to be loved. And I don't care what anyone says, that's just how we're wired. So I'm hopeful. I think there's hope for it. I think there's a chance.
Okay. Would you ever be The Bachelor?
I don't know. Nobody's asked me that.
What?
Possibly. Who knows?
You're welcome, ABC.
Yeah.
I just made it happen.
Tell them to call me. I have the house for it. Roses everywhere.
People love your show. They feel very connected to you.
And I think people love the story about this young couple in California that had not a dollar, but all they had was a dream, and ended up creating this, you know, huge TV show and having kids, and, you know, the world got to watch or raise our kids on camera, and, you know, they become part of our life. I think that's what it is. Like, when I first was on TV, I never thought anyone would ever come up to me. Like, it wasn't even like a thought in my mind. When I did it, I was like, oh, maybe we can get more real estate deals. It was like a business move for me.
Interesting.
And then somehow my business idea turned into a TV show. And then somehow I've now turned into a TV personality, because I've been doing it for so long.
Yeah. Well, who's the most surprising person that's come up to you to say they watched the show?
Oh, the most surprising. Well, I know Hillary Clinton talked about the show. I know it was in a couple of movies. But I've had like professional fighters. Daniel Cormier came up to me, loved the show. Mm-hmm. Michael Bisping, he loved the show. These are all professional UFC fighters. So that was really cool for me because I'm a huge fight fan, huge UFC fan. So like I saw them and I was super excited to like meet them, and then they were excited to meet me. So I was like, oh, this is cool.
Such a probably a weird moment.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah. So I was like super excited. Yeah.
So what are you working on now?
Wow, I'm working on so many different things right now. So wrapping up season 8 of Flip or Flop, which starts airing August 1st. I start shooting my whole new solo series, Flipping 101, with Tariq El Moussa, which is going to start filming August 2nd. And I'm super excited about this project because it kind of gets to take my life's mission of really giving back and helping people and like just doing some really great things and melting that with real estate. So I'm able to go in there and really help coach rookie flippers. And I just loved the first episode I did so much. So I'm so excited for the series. Another thing I just shot was called Tariq's Flipside, which is a digital series, which I'm super excited about too, because it shows me outside of Flip or Flop. So people kind of get to see the real me, like what I do, how do I live. They get to see me playing with my babies, which I love and adore more than anything in the world. Every single thing I freaking do is for those two, because I know they're watching me, and I know one day there's this thing called the internet and they're going to read everything about me, and I want them to be proud of their dad. And the only way they're going to be proud of their dad is if their dad does good things.
And then how can people find you on social media?
On social media, you can find me on Instagram. I'm most active, and the hashtag, or not the hashtag, the at sign or whatever it is, the handle is The Real Tariq El Moussa. And on Facebook, I am Tariq El Moussa. And on top of all that stuff, I'm working on two new YouTube shows. One is called The Breakdown Collective, which I'm going to start shooting soon. Another one is called Tariq's Two Cents, which is all real estate related. And I also just started a podcast, which is also going to be a YouTube show, called Life by Design.
With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you gotta get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. My friend John Ward is a screenwriter, a director, and an actor. He currently serves as president of Bay Ridge Films. He's originally from North Carolina, so of course I asked him to watch Bravo's Southern Charm. He's made a lot of films that have to do with the South. John, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
If you could just tell everybody the unbelievable gift that your beautiful wife gave you.
Well, it's the greatest gift you can ever get, other than the two kids she gave me. I had a really rare blood disease about 3 years ago. I was shooting a movie called Heart of the Country, and I was just super tired, you know. And then next thing I knew, I went to the doctors, and they found out that I had 1% of my kidneys left. And this rare blood disorder just fries your kidneys. and I needed a kidney transplant or, you know, I was going to die. And my wife immediately said, I'll do it. You know, I'll give him my kidney. And the doctor said, listen, the odds of a spouse, it's 1 in 10,000. And, you know, we joked that we were from the South and that we're probably related and all this kind of stuff. And so, and anyway, it turns out she was a match. I was the one out of 10,000.
Wow.
And so she gave me her kidney and, we had the transplant at USC and, you know, I got a second chance at life. I call it my second birthday. It was amazing.
And it's been about, it's a little over a year now.
Yeah. Yeah. About 14 months, about 14 months.
Well, I always love to see you guys and I love to see your kids. And I remember you left for a little bit to go back to North Carolina. Of course, you two are enormous UNC fans.
We actually met at the University of North Carolina. Yeah.
I was shocked to my core when you told me you had never seen Southern Charm. So I was really interested to hear what you thought. I know that you've made films that are set in the South. You, of course, have lived there. I kind of felt bad because this episode, they were on a trip to Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Yeah.
So they took this group of friends and took them to Colorado. So I thought, all right, he's probably confused. But did you get a sense right away that these were people that had known each other for a good amount of time, or did it seem like some knew each other for a long time and then a couple were kind of thrown into the mix?
Yeah, I would say that, yeah, immediately, you know, my first impression was, holy crap, I completely feel like I know these people because these are all the people I went to high school with. And, you know, I mean, it's just like every archetype of everybody that I went to high school with was represented in the show. And yeah, I felt like some of the people, most of the people knew each other for a long time and they had all these secrets about each other and that kind of stuff. And then it felt like maybe one or two were kind of new.
There was a couple in the show, Madison with the long blonde hair waving extensions, and then Austin, the tall guy. They had an incident that you're probably not aware of. And that is the reason a lot of them think they're a horrible couple. Madison walked into Austin's apartment one morning only to find him with two other women.
Whoa.
Yes. So she...
Not one, but two.
Now, they stayed together for a little bit to make it work, and now they've broken up. And so they're all kind of confused why she would want to stay with him. But Shep seems to think that she is only with him because she wants to be on a television show. And I'm thinking that you probably have some good insight into this kind of person.
That's interesting because she definitely seemed, you know, it was funny to me when I watched, I don't watch a lot of reality TV, and here's why. Because I watch actors all the time for a living. And I, you know, was a mediocre and remain a mediocre actor myself. And so I can tell when on reality TV, somebody is there just to be on TV and they're essentially acting, but it's not very good acting. And I got the sense from her that that was definitely the case, you know, just kind of the way she would do her body language on the couch and, you know, just the way she would, you know, strike poses and stuff like that. You know, it's, you know, good acting is reacting. And bad acting is proacting.
Roger.
Where you're being proactive in a scene, and so she was definitely proacting. She was creating moods and expressions that weren't necessarily based on what she had been given by other people. And so I was like, okay, this is somebody who's posing and trying to get famous, being on a reality show. So yeah, I definitely think that. He's probably got a point there.
So by the end of the episode, Madison, who we just mentioned, suggests that Shep, or she threatens him actually and says, I know too much about you. You better not, push me. Many have guessed, and she has actually said, that the reason that Shep does not like her is because he hit on her and she rejected him. And in that moment, she threatens him, "I know a lot about you and you better be careful." And then she announces to everyone on a television show that he has chlamydia and passed it on to another girl in the cast named Danny.
To me, that was the apex of the show. And I my jaw dropped for so many reasons. I mean, first of all, why would you even say that? Then you're starting to think, is that even true? Like, there's, because my gut instinct was that wasn't true. I don't believe that. I don't think this woman got chlamydia from this guy. I think it, because, you know, I spent like 5 minutes in my own head thinking, you know, how does an innocent person react? And it's exactly the way she reacted when she heard that. And so then that makes it like 10 times worse, because you just made up something horrible about somebody. And then this guy's betraying the trust that the other girl gave. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. The whole thing was just, I was stunned. I was floored by the whole thing. I didn't get the feeling that she saw that coming.
Yeah.
And I got the feeling, so I felt like her response was a true reaction, the way a person really would react, especially if that was completely untrue. And it's, you know, because you're just utterly incredulous. You're like, what are you,
right?
Like, how do you, like, where did this come from? And then it kind of spirals down from there about who told who what, when, and who's the real culprit here, and who's ultimately culpable for this. And it was, man, that was a cesspool. Southern culture is very hard to understand if you don't live in it. And there are these, it's very kind of, sectional. Like, there's this type of people and they all kind of hang out together and live in the same kind of places and that kind of stuff. And then, and they're just like their parents, who were just like their grandparents, who were just like their great grandparents, and nothing really changes. And then there's other subsets of Southern culture that are completely different, that have totally different interests and even different accents. Like, people who live in the same town have different accents depending on kind of what subset you come from. And so these people kind of represent a very specific type of Southern culture subset. It's the traditional, what I would, this is a phrase I'm making up, but I would call it the traditional class. And, you know, Southern culture is changing because people are moving in to the South from other places. And so that is definitely changing the South. But there's still this group of people that have lived there for, you know, hundreds of years, and they are the wealthy class usually, or they came from wealth. It's been maybe sometimes it's been diluted over the years and they're not as wealthy. That family's not as wealthy as it used to be, but they still have those traditions of the old South, the old kind of wealthy class. And that these people definitely represent that. I could spot it from a mile away. I went to in Wilmington, I went to a private high school for 2 years, and then I transferred to the public school and for my last 2 years. And these people were exactly like the people that I saw in the at the private school. Like, they were just like that. And they talk like that, and they dress like that, and they look like that.
Tell me what you're working on now.
Well, you know, I'm recovering from the kidney transplant, and I'm getting back on my feet, you know. And so I've just written a new script. It's called Eye of the Storm, and it's set in the South. And it's about these two, you know, most of the stuff I do is kind of romantic type stuff, and it's kind of Nicholas Sparksy stuff. And it's about these two people that one, the guy comes from kind of a poor family, and the girl comes from a very wealthy family, and they had beach houses side by side on this barrier island in North Carolina, and they would always spend their summers together. And now it's 20 years later, and he's a professional baseball, a professional country music singer. And I originally had him as a baseball player, but I rewrote him as a country music singer. And she's having all kinds of issues and problems. And they both go to this house right when a hurricane is coming. Oh. They both go back to their original houses. And this hurricane comes, and it comes up very quickly. Sometimes that happens. They just kind of sneak up on you, and they get stuck during the storm in this one night. And we kind of go back in time and find out all these hidden secrets they have between them, and all the things that have transpired over the years, and all that kind of stuff all comes out while they're trapped in this house during the hurricane. And then I won't give away the ending, but it's pretty, pretty cool.
That sounds great. And then how can people learn more about the great charity that you're involved with?
Well, you know, I do everything I can for Donate Life, and the National Kidney Foundation. I encourage anybody, please, you know, donate, get involved. Just Google the National Kidney Foundation. And obviously I'm biased towards kidney donation because it saved my life, but you know, being a living donor, which you can do for a kidney because you have two of them. And then obviously there's being a, you know, just being a donor, if you were to pass away, that, you know, you can donate other organs. You know, I would just encourage everybody, first of all, be a donor. Just put it on your driver's license. It literally takes 2 seconds to fill out the form. You can do it online. Google Donate Life. Make yourself a donor.
I'm so happy that you're doing so well. And people really should go and check out John's IMDb page. You can see all the stuff he's been in. In fact, I can't wait to tell my friends you were in Sleeping with the Enemy.
I think I was 18. I know. Yeah, it was my freshman year in college, and I was taking the exams, and a casting director called me and said, you're at the University of North Carolina, right? I said, yeah. They said, well, there's this Julia Roberts movie being shot there, and we need this scene, and it's one day. Can you do it? And it happened to be the day between, you know, how you have exams one day and then not the next, and, you know, your quote study day. So I spent my study day doing that scene there, and it was awesome. It was fun. That was a classic movie. That was a classic movie.
Great movie.
And I had a crush on Julia Roberts, so I made a fool out of myself when I met her. I was, you know, 18-year-old weirdo.
How can people follow you on social media?
Well, you know, the best place to go is my company site, bayridgefilms.com. And it's all, you know, all one word. Bay as in B, you know, as in boy. Bayridgefilms.com is definitely the place to go. And you can see everything I've done. You can see trailers and music videos. I've done a lot of country music videos and stuff like that. And you can find out about all my movies and what's going on and keep updated. And, you know, I'll put some stuff on, you know, I'll put pictures and stuff on there of what I'm working on and that kind of thing. Because I've been kind of dormant for a while, but I'm slowly coming out of hibernation.
Is there anything better than a great night's sleep? And in order for that to happen, you need a great comforter. And that's why I love the brand Buffy. They make bedding that is earth-friendly and cruelty-free. Their latest product, which I'm crazy about, is called The Breeze. It's a comforter made entirely from 100% eucalyptus fiber to regulate temperature and keep you cool and comfortable all night long. So no more night sweats. You can get cozy without overheating. And it's softer than cotton and naturally soothes skin. I'm telling you, it is so soft on your skin. And you know what? It's earth friendly. The eucalyptus uses 10 times less water than cotton to grow. And its fiber is produced using recyclable, earth friendly solvents. And the best part, it's hypoallergenic. And in our family's case, my son really needs something that's hypoallergenic. And plus, its high thread count shuts out dust, mold, and mites for a healthier sleeping environment. And I'm so allergic to dust. You can try a comforter in your own bed for free. And if you don't love it, you can return it at no cost. So you must go to Buffy, buffy.co and use promo code REALITY for $20 off. Again, go to buffy.co and use promo code REALITY. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmerman dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. My friend Danielle Schaefer is a lifestyle blogger. She's a social media master. She's got four kids and she hosts a podcast. And Danielle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kate. I can't believe I'm finally doing this.
I just love somebody who will get down to the nitty gritty. So that's why I've asked you to watch Kate Plus Date, which is a romance show centered around Kate Gosselin from John and Kate Plus Eight. How much do you know about Kate Gosselin?
Okay, so as far as what I know, I feel like she is a hot mess express. She had those eight kids, the six couplets. Are the other two twins?
Kate,
I can't remember.
Yep. Yeah, twins
they
and then
are.
Six
okay,
kids.
And then she, you know, had her show, and it really gave us the public. It gave us a view into her world. And it was the most uncomfortable show I watched. I mean, how many years ago was that? Was that 10?
Something like that.
I think it was something like that. But it was uncomfortable. Do you remember her on that show and how she would demand like and berate her husband right on air like that? Like it was awful. Like it made us all cringe. That's what I remember the most about her is that she had no like soul. It was just ugly. And I remember her hair Wow. was hideous. And mm-hmm. then she finally got extensions, but it was just, it just made me uncomfortable. I think, you know, I'll be a little nice here. I mean, in her defense, I mean, she had, imagine having six babies at once. I mean, that's ridiculously hard, but then to go on TV and share that with everyone, that's a whole nother avenue. But I guess she was looking for the money, right?
Not only that, I think she was looking for free stuff. She thinks she's just the kind of person that said, even from the beginning, I have all these children, now people need to help me. I think she got a free tummy tuck. I mean, that's a sweet deal right there.
And then she got boobs. Got free boobs.
And then remember, she always had that security guard with her, Steve Nields, and then people basically said she was boning him. He was married, but he would always travel with her. And I would always ask myself, why does Kate Gosselin need a security guard? Like George Clooney, yeah, maybe I get it. But who in God's earth would want to like jump over a fence to get an autograph from Kate Gosselin?
I mean, come on. Yeah, no, I don't know. But I think she did sleep with that guy. Didn't that come out later on?
I don't know if it did come out. And then the other thing she complained about were the paparazzi were always following her. And clearly she set up paparazzi shots in Reading, Pennsylvania, which I've been to many times. It's not a metropolis, let's put it this way. And she was always outside of either like a Costco or a nail salon. So, Bruno, the paparazzo from New York City is not like, let's screw Beyonce today. Let's drive to Reading, Pennsylvania to see what's going on in the Gosselin household. So I have a hard time believing anything that she's throwing my way. But I have to say, I think that this show, this is what my guess is. This obviously is a show where they have a relationship expert named Rachel, and they're going to set her up on about 10 dates and have her teenage children who clearly hate her help in the decision-making process. But I think she's been pushing TLC for years to give her another show because the money's drying up. And I think that the only thing that they agreed to do was a dating show. I'm sure she was pitching, like, let's go on travel across the states or around the world, I'll bring the kids with me. And they were like, boring, boring, boring. You're a horrible person. Let's see if you can actually make out with somebody other than your, you know, your bodyguard. And this is what they took. And now I think that's why she's miserable on camera, because from a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate her? Or would you say like 10 is like Kathy Bates misery and 1 is like Kate Hudson in every movie she's ever played in? Where is she on that scale?
Oh, she's like a 9-10 then, I would say. Don't you think?
Yeah, I feel like like she's always like a couple hours away from chopping off someone's limbs. She does not have any joy in her life.
No, and it's really uncomfortable to watch this show. Like, you sit there and you're cringing because her body language is so hateful. It's like she's so miserable that you're just like, is this really on air right now? How could this even be a show? Because, Kate, in the defense of TLC, it's almost genius, because I kind of want to know, does she ever loosen up? Does she ever make out with someone and lick their ear? Like, what does this girl do? What happens throughout the season of the show?
So the septuplets are 15 and her twins, Maddie and Kara, are 18, and they're part of this process, and they're doing her no favors. They said she's unloving, unkind, unaffectionate. She likes her personal space. What dude is going to watch this show back and be like, yeah, sign me up? Not only does she have all these kids, and one of the kids is, by the way, missing. It's like in some institution, and she didn't even tell John Gosling where he was for like a good 2 years. Like, I'm not sure she's the most joyful, sweet person in the world.
There's no way any of these men want to date her. There's no way. I feel like the guy who sang in the opera, he wasn't told she had 8 kids. Like, his reaction to her having 8 kids was like, he was appalled. He was like, 8? And he said it like 3 times. 8?
I bet you those kids of hers just sleep with one eye open all the time.
Yeah. She's like a hothead since the beginning.
Do you remember on her show when she would flip out if there were any crumbs anywhere?
That's what I mean. Like, this woman is clearly crazy. Like, I've never seen her lay on the floor and roll with her children. Instead, she's looking at everything except the joy of having children. I've never seen this woman smile and be stoked that she's got all these babies.
This is how they can switch the show up. If I were the producer of the show, I would say, let's take her on a date to the roller rink and let's give her somebody who's somewhat attractive, so she's sort of somewhat interested, until she realizes that her ex-husband, John, is the DJ at the roller rink and she's not allowed to leave under contractual obligations. And so to see the dynamic between those two years later, that would make this show worth it. Did you enjoy it? Will you watch this again at the gym?
Okay. The only reason, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to watch it again because I need to see if she makes out with someone. I really need to know if somebody actually likes her and wants to embrace her with her 8 kids and her very large uterus. I'm confused. I'm confused over this whole thing. So I'm going to have to disagree with you, and I'm going to have to watch it. Now I need to know who the guy is that really likes her, and is he doing it for TV, or is it because he wants her?
That's a good question. Well, how can people track you down if they want to follow you on Instagram? And of course, how can they listen to your podcast?
I am City Girl Gone Mom. That's everything. That's my handle on Instagram, on all social media. Even my column on Today is City Girl Gone Mom. And my podcast is called The Mom Confidential. Don't tell the kids.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests this week, Tarik El Mousseau, John Ward, and Danielle Schaefer. Remember, I have a Patreon page that has all new extra content episodes. If you go to my Patreon page, patreon.com/KateCasey. You can also check me out on Twitter at Kate Casey. My Facebook group is Reality Life with Kate Casey. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. And always remember to leave me a 5-star review. I so appreciate all the reviews you've left, and I'm almost to 3,000. So if you could leave me a review this week, I would absolutely love it. As always, I'm wishing you guys a great week, and I hope you get to watch a lot of great TV.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.